Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Klein and Family Leadership Committee of the Mental Health Services Oversight and Accountability Commission. My name is Katara Aslami Tamplin. I'm one of the commissioners, and I'm filling in for our chair of the CFLC, which is Commissioner Renita Anthony. And unfortunately, she had other issues, other things to attend to, and couldn't make it. But you have myself and you have Commissioner Wooten with you. So I want to give a quick shout out to Tina. Hi. And obviously the wonderful staff and the committee members here to for this meeting. We're looking forward to a productive meeting. And obviously there's two really important issues, subjects that we'll be talking about. One is the COVID-19 response. And the other is the engaging with leaders from outside of the state that have implemented peer certification and being able to engage and ask questions so that we can have some more information we need for our process in California. And so we've invited Matthew Federici at the Copeland Center for that to talk about Pennsylvania's peer certification process. So I'd like to call the meeting to order. And Tom, will you please take the roll?
Yes. I should clarify first in regards to the roll. Phil, I probably should have asked you this question ahead of time. Since we have commissioners who are filling in for the chair, do they count toward the quorum or not?
So
we have Katara, yeah, so, we have Commissioner Tamplin and Commissioner Wooten.
And Commissioner Tamplin is sitting in for Commissioner Anthony.
Okay, yeah.
So yes.
So we'll count toward the quorum.
Yes.
Okay, great. Oh, sorry. Okay, Commissioner Tamplin.
Here.
Commissioner Wooten. I believe Commissioner Wooten is here. Oh, you're still working?
Okay. I'm here.
Great, thank you. Chris Barton. Andrea Crook. Lisa Dryan Zagala.
I'm here. I just couldn't unmute myself quick enough. Sorry.
Oh, Andrea, gotcha. Okay. Eve Eichwald. Crystal Harper. Jean Marie Harris.
Here.
Richard Szyzanowski.
I'm here.
Pete LaFollette.
He's muted.
Pete LaFollette.
I believe he...
He's muted.
Is he on the phone or is he...
Okay, I just unmuted.
Gotcha. Thank you, Pete. Sally Mandujan.
Yeah, this is Mark Carmack. I'd like to make some announcements sometime during the meeting. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Jeff McLennan.
Present.
Darlene Prettyman. Hector Ramirez.
Buenas tardes, I'm here.
Elizabeth R. Stone.
Present.
Ruth Tiscareño. Sharon Yates. We have a quorum. Hello, is that Sharon?
No, this is Ruth. I was trying to.
Oh, Ruth, sorry.
I'm on the phone. I'm on
okay.
the phone. Hello,
okay.
Everybody.
Great. Commissioner Tamplin, we have a quorum.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Let me. Thank you. Thank you. We have a quorum.
Yes.
Well, okay. Great. So thank you for the role. I'll do some general housekeeping, share some of that. This is your first time on one of our meetings, to make a public comment, please, make sure you, It's during the public comment period of the agenda. You may request to make a public comment by clicking on the raise hand icon, or if you're on your phone, please press star 9. That will raise your hand for us, and you will be placed in the queue, and we'll be able to call on you for when your time is to speak. And the public comment periods will be about two to three minutes each, and Kayla will let you know when your time starts and when your time is wrapping up. So we will do our best to take comments in the order they are received. And please note, once the public comment period for the agenda item starts, we will close the public comment queue. So the moderator will insert the word last comment next to the commentator's name. So you'll know that who's speaking, who will have the last public comment on that item. Members of the public should also be prepared to, again, speak for about 3 minutes or less. And when we've reached the end of your time, again, Kayla will let you know when your time is up. And so we appreciate you understanding this process and your flexibility also. If anything comes up, please definitely let us know. We want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to make a public comment during that period. So moving on to our first action item, which is the approval of the October 16, 2020 minutes. Do any members have any questions or comments?
This is Andrea. I was gonna move to approve and applaud whoever did them because they were incredibly thorough. So thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Andrea. So we have a motion. Is there
second?
There's a second.
This is Hector. I had a comment.
Great, thank you. I was going to ask, are there any comments? Go ahead, Hector.
Thank you. So I really wanted to point out just my personal experience from that meeting. As a consumer of the Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health, I commented, and as a member committee, I commented on my experience with the department's peer process, and they sent the particular staff that you highlighted at this. And I think I really want to highlight and really point out that as a result of those public comments, I experienced retaliation from the department based on what this individual reported back in my comments. So as a stakeholder, I really want to highlight the retaliation that we experience even by participating in this committee and the presenters that the OAC brings. As a result, this individual has nothing to do at all with my medical services at all whatsoever. And yet the comments that this individual brought back from my experience really had an impact on the continuity and the access of my services as a consumer. So I really wanna highlight that really negative experience and the retaliation that I had to deal with to try to retain my services with the department and that as somebody who's trying to harm the department, but somebody who's just providing feedback from a consumer point of view. So I was very disappointed that I had to experience that. And I, as well as some of my other peers that come and present to the OAC, we experience retaliation at times and harassment for participating in committees like this ones, which we are entitled to as stakeholders. So I really want to note that as a sign, as you move forward, to caution the speakers that you present and take into consideration the harm that they will do to individuals with disabilities here in the state of California that interact with the OAC.
I'm sorry you experienced that. Maybe someone from the commission can follow up with you and so that we, I'm really sorry you experienced that. We definitely don't want any participation in our meetings for anyone to experience retaliation. So I think I saw a nod from Tom, so we'll reach out to Hector and make sure we gather some information and try to resolve that. So thank you, Hector, for bringing it up. Are there any other comments on the minutes for 16, any edits or questions? So we have a motion and we have a second. And now I believe, Tom, will you be calling the vote?
Uh-huh. Okay, yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner Tamplin?
Aye.
Commissioner Wooten?
I have to abstain. I wasn't there. Thank you.
Okay. Chris Barton? Andrea Crook? Andrea Crook?
Yes, I said aye.
Okay, sorry, I didn't hear you. Lisa Dryan Zagala? Eve Eichwald? Crystal Harper? Jean Marie Harris?
Aye.
Richard Szymanowski?
Abstain.
Pete LaFollette?
Pete LaFollette?
Okay.
Yes.
Sally Mandusian? Jeff McLennan? Jeff McLennan?
Yes, yes.
Darlene Prettyman? Hector Ramirez?
Abstain.
Elizabeth R. Stone?
Approve.
Ruth Tiscareño? Ruth Tiscareño?
Hello?
Yes.
I wasn't present, so I abstain.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then Sharon Yates. The motion passes. Okay, that motion passes. Commissioner Tamplin.
Thank you. That motion passed. We'll move on to the next item. And this is our COVID-19 impact and the presentation on the commission's assessment of the impact of COVID-19. So our executive director, Toby Ewing, was planning to be with us today to present on the commission's efforts to assess the impacts of COVID-19 and on our mental health system. However, he is not able to be here today due to a family emergency. So we do have Jim Mayer, who will be presenting the COVID framework item. And he is the commission's chief of innovation incubator. Mr. Mayer has been instrumental in coordinating the staff effort to design the survey and document the results. He also has led the efforts to create the document that we will be discussing today, which includes considerations on how funding should be prioritized to address COVID-19 on our mental health system. So we want to be clear that the framework is not a proposal for how we spend the available funds. The commission is seeking input from the committee and the public on the available options that are outlined in the framework and we're open to hearing what other priorities you may have that the commission should consider. So we've been doing a lot of work on this for over the past 6 months, and our hope is that the information gathered today will guide the efforts to provide the support that is needed at this time. So welcome, Jim. Thank you for presenting to us today, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, commissioners and committee members. I'm glad to be here with you. That was a perfect setup for this conversation today. The commission received in the 2021 budget $2,020,000 from the legislature to support system improvements focused on the impacts of COVID-19. And many activities at the commission over the last 9 months have been adjusted in one way or another to accommodate both the impacts of the pandemic and on the system as well as clients. And in the meantime, we've been developing some information that informed the framework that is before you. I want to repeat and underscore that the framework is intended as a discussion guide that will synthesize some of what we've heard so far, mostly to encourage conversation among you and input from you and from the public that will feed into the commission's deliberations in the first part of January and the first part of 2021. The framework before you includes a description of what the legislature's expectations were for what the commission would do. It summarizes some of the commission's COVID-related activities, the activities the commission has undertaken to gather some information. It also then identifies some of the commission's strategic initiatives, many of which have already started to adapt or evolve to the conditions of COVID and could further be modified and improved upon in order to have the kind of impact expected by the legislature, as well as some new and emerging opportunities. All is intended to inspire that kind of conversation about what would be the best use of this money. I'm going to walk through briefly each of those pieces. The first is that the legislature and our conversations with them as they developed this appropriation really had two expectations for how the commission might work. The first would be to support county behavioral health agencies and their community-based service providers to adapt to what they really saw as the threefold challenge of COVID: meeting the mental health needs that are associated with the pandemic, adapting services to the public health requirements around social distancing and other things, and sustaining essential services with what might be declining revenues because of the economic impacts of the pandemic. A second expectation that the commission would take a broader view and look at other community services, government agencies, First Five, for example, as well as employers and private sector healthcare agencies to see if there was an opportunities to further broaden the response to the impact of the pandemic. The next section of the framework identifies the needs that summarizes very briefly some of the needs. And over the last few months, the first and some of the most important feedback the commission has received has been from many members of the public and stakeholders and other partners who've been making comments at each of our commission meetings and committee meetings, telling us what the impact is they see on the in the community. And all of that has informed the staff and the commission's discussions and deliberations. In addition, the commission proactively reached out to stakeholders that we have grantees, stakeholder grantees, local government grantees, and did a survey with them and early on in the pandemic to understand what's the impact on the clients, the families, the communities they're trying to serve, and what was the impact on their ability to meet those needs. That work is summarized in the first attachment in the framework. The second bit of work was a survey we developed that we sent out to all of the county's service providers. It went to a number of school districts, county offices of education, First Fives, and it went to all stakeholder groups as well, asking them about what the impacts were that they were seeing, both on members of the community as well as the system's ability to serve them. We had more than 200 responses, a tremendous response to that effort, and the survey results are summarized in attachment B that's connected to the framework. Many of these impacts won't surprise the members of the committee or the members of the public. They mirror very closely the things that you have shared with us anecdotally over the last few months, but it does serve to document that even when we reach farther and to literally every corner of the state, that these impacts are being felt. The third thing the commission did was it launched early in this process what we called a rapid response network. We realized that there was counties, First Five service providers that were having to make decisions they'd never made before. And they needed, and perhaps they could benefit from somebody who could develop expert answers to difficult questions. So the rapid response network was set up and we received over the course of 3 months, 30 very specific and very challenging requests from counties, First Five commissions, service providers, literally grappling with how to adapt to the pandemic. What we did with each of those was did a very in-depth literature review, and we connected with a network of experts around the nation and then developed a response and brought it back to that county. And iterated on it until we had provided that information to the requester. And then we generalized those answers and posted them on the internet, on the commission's website. obviously that was a benefit to the people that were requesting that information. The evaluation was overwhelmingly positive, but it also gave us insight to the challenges the system had, mostly around trying to adapt to telehealth, trying to adapt their own organizational sustainability with all of the pressures that their employees had, try to adapt to the fiscal pressures that the pandemic was had underway. So all of those were some inputs. The commission also has received two specific requests for the use of these funds. The Teachers for Healthy Kids has requested $50,000 to provide training to mental health practitioners in schools. And the Cross-Population Sustainability Steering Committee of the California Reducing Disparities Project has urged the commission to allocate the funds to community-defined evidence-based practices to address the impacts of systemic racism compounded by COVID-19. So the next part of the framework is, as I referenced, identifies five of the commission's strategic initiatives, each of which also intersects with an area of high impact associated with COVID. In each of these areas, we have some substantial activity underway, usually in the form of a multi-county collaborative or some other network of service providers that are working to innovate and improve and increase services. And each of them provides would provide an opportunity for us to build off that momentum and to focus and tailor some action around specific COVID-related needs. And those five are the school mental health work, which was summarized in the report adopted by the commission just a couple of months ago, the early psychosis learning healthcare network, which continues to grow with financial support as well as technical assistance, a variety of youth empowerment projects and activities, including the drop-in centers that could be a potentially very valuable resource for youth that are further disconnected because of the pandemic. The Prevention and Early Intervention Project has surfaced the incredible value of culturally competent navigators and communities who can reach out and connect to people who were underserved and often unconnected before the pandemic and are even more so now. And the Workplace Mental Health Project, which could have some impact, particularly on low-income workers from communities that have been hard hit from both the disease and the economic fallout, but nevertheless are still required to go to work and are unable to work safely from their homes, as so many of us are. We also identified three other opportunities that are just examples of the kinds of work where we could be able to leverage the capacities of the commission and the network and its responsibilities to have a positive impact. The first was the commission heard back in November the report from Solano mm-hmm. County about their successful effort to really truly engage communities, underserved communities, and to adapt and deploy the class standards to a wide variety of community agencies, county agencies in particular, that was showing promising beneficial impacts in terms of reducing disparities. There's some 40 counties have expressed some interest in learning from and adapting and deploying that as something that would be beneficial in ordinary times, but perhaps of extraordinary benefit at a time when those communities have been even harder hit. The second one is the commission has been working with and in discussions with the Newsom administration throughout this crisis, particularly around how to embed and build capacity for mental health response during times of emergencies. We have had at least one county that has an innovation plan that's been working on this in response to past disasters. And so there may be some opportunities to bolster across counties the ability to plan for and respond to emergencies, even as they are in the midst of doing so now. And the third would be to build off the strong interest we received in the Rapid Response Network, perhaps building out some partnerships with other associations and government units that could help the counties continue to evolve the way they operate. There's a strong sense we're not going back to where we were. We're going to a different place and hopefully a better place. And so would there be value in the commission organizing and informing that effort as the counties make that evolution? Commissioners and members of the committee, that's a summary of the work we've done so far. Again, it was an intention to catalyze a conversation from you, and we'll be listening carefully and summarizing the ideas that come from this discussion for the commission's deliberations early in 21.
are you open for comments now, or what's happening?
Yeah, I was. I think we would wait for the Commissioner Tamplin, but go ahead, Commissioner Tamplin.
Yeah. No, that was it. Thank you, Jim. And we are definitely wanting to hear questions and comments from our committee members.
Can I go ahead, or?
Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I would just like to say I did receive the document, but I didn't realize it was to be read and we were going to discuss it today. So maybe when stuff gets sent out, it could be indicated that it's for this meeting. But I just got off like a 2-hour meeting with the Children, Youth and Family Committee down in Ventura and heard from people in the juvenile detention facility. I guess there's some changes for the state law that are bringing quite a lot of challenges to juveniles that are incarcerated in carceral institutions. I guess because older youth are also now joining younger youth. And because of COVID, there have been like zero education or behavioral health services. It seems if we're also looking at COVID, there's quite a lot of stuff going on for juveniles now is including a number of up to TE youth. So I'd like us to also be considered how youth that are in that situation are getting their needs met.
Thank you.
So this is Andrea, and I just want to make a couple comments. This is a really a dense document, and I know a lot of individuals haven't even received it, some until today. And so I'm just, would like a little more information on, I believe this is going forward to the commission, you said, in January. But I think, one of the, just having an opportunity to just take one read through, there's a couple things that stuck out to me. For example, on page 3 at the top, when you talked about the commission receiving a couple requests for funding, I don't think that these requests were solicited. And so I think that if, that was something that we even considered, that would need to be open for a community stakeholder process. And then additionally in the number 3, where it says the commission strategic priorities on page 3 as well, it starts off with really talking about the consultation with the administration and the legislature. And that's how these prioritized issues around innovations and improvements came to be. But I want to say that, it's hard to kind of swallow all of this when we're really not meeting with our stakeholders. I think that's what embodies the MHSA, and that we need to go back and we need to talk to the people and find out what their needs are and be a little more strategic. Additionally, I just wanted to move over to page 4 when we're talking about the prevention and early intervention. Of course, I can always get behind that. And we're talking about cultural brokers. I believe that was in the first bullet as far as, a recommendation. And I really wanna highlight the importance of peer providers and the diversity of peer providers throughout California and the evidence base behind peer providers. I know that you've been hearing from us for years and years and years about expanding these positions, and this will really help, and reflect the diversity of our communities I think that this is something that probably would have come to be had this been a more, driven through a stakeholder process rather than an administrative or legislative process. So that's all I have for now. I'll give other folks a chance to chime in.
Hi.
Thank you, Andrea.
This is Jeff. I guess I can take my turn. First of all, thank you for staff and the staff member who presented this. It's very, very good, very complex. And like Andrea, I have to agree, 2 days notice is not enough time to absorb this with other things in life going on. But I would like to make the following comments, please. Has this $2 million been driven to the counties? I happen to sit on my county health board and I have not heard from staff on this. They know I sit on this committee. So my first question is, has it been driven down, not just sent? Because as we all know, and I'll comment again on this, COVID is causing a tremendous overload and stress on some people. For example, last evening, I was in a meeting where one of the women had eight Zoom meetings in one day, this being her ninth. So I must stress that in terms of what COVID may be doing to people, both in the workplace as well as in our program handling. A second comment I might make, this may seem a little bit extreme, but it has to do with the culture. I'm curious if the COVID-19 is causing cultural stress among the many communities, the hundreds of communities. For example, I'm aware of the Pacific Islanders. There's over 100 cultures in the South Pacific. And the obvious question, and I don't mean to mean silly here, but what does a mask mean to many people? So I think we may have some interesting cultural discoveries when we get into masks and other parts of an illness when it comes to our many cultures. Another comment has to do with crisis units. I've been in touch with staff in regards to crisis units. We do not have one in Placer County. And given the additional stresses that parents handling children at home, the overload they have. Secondly, the overload that you who are still working, if you be it from home or a car, wherever you can, are the crisis centers available? And I would like to stress multi-county, regional, not just per county, because as you know, many of the smaller counties do not have this resource, and it takes a while. Another comment I'd like to make is I've already made is the telehealth burnout. But one of the problems I am aware of by our mental health service providers in this county, and I know they're larger, so they probably spill into your counties as well, is the telehealth Zoom Microsoft Teams sometimes doesn't work well with clients. And this can be very challenging. For example, a lot of the DUI and addiction programs are now being done on Zoom. And I've observed some of them. And I'm not sure that a person with, let's say, comorbidities of drug addiction and a psychotic problem is going to think that a Zoom is a wonderful thing to do, particularly when there's many per day. So I have a problem with that, that this report may help the additional funding. And then a couple of questions on definitions. Number one, I'd like to know what you mean by rapid response. And number two, I would like to know what is meant by triage, because I've seen different definitions, particularly of triage. If staff could kindly provide that information, thank you.
Thank you. Tom, did you want to respond?
Yeah, well, maybe Jim, you can respond to rapid response, and I'd be happy to talk about triage.
Thank you.
I would. So if when you get a moment, Mr. McLennan, if you read the summary of the rapid response that's attached, and it'll give you the metrics of how quickly we responded. We normally, when a provider came to us and said, we're looking for information, we said, how fast do you want it? And if they said, I need it in a week, we made sure we got back to them in a week. There was one type where they said, can you get it to us in 48 hours? And the answer was yes. And we did the best, and they were happy with that. So it really was intended to develop the best possible answer in the short amount of time. And then just one other thing, and I can follow up with you. One of the projects the commission has underway is the Crisis Now Planning Academy, and Placer County is participating in that to be developing a comprehensive crisis response system. And part of the effort there is also to collaborate with neighboring counties to build out their systems. So that's not immediate relief, like it's going to help us tomorrow, but I'd be happy to share information about the work that's underway there.
Yeah, and may I suggest for those others on the committee, since this is the first time I've heard that, thank you for providing that information, sir. May I suggest if you have any other committee members who have counties, who work with their counties, that you do a courtesy and let our committee members know this, because I feel a little foolish being left out.
Great, Jeff. Yeah, I'm happy to speak about triage in terms of the commission's triage programs. There's 30 programs that we fund across the state, and typically, what we know of triage is an assessment of a person's condition to determine the best approach. And so, the goal of triage is to reduce unnecessary hospitalizations, to reduce incarceration, and I think if we think in terms of mental health crisis, those are two examples of treatments or approaches that can be imposed on people who are in a mental health crisis that are not necessarily helpful to them. And so to triage the situation, we're trying to move them out of those situations, either hospitalization or incarceration, or out of danger in some way, and then divert them to appropriate programs such as crisis stabilization units or peer respite programs. Like you mentioned, there's a need for CSUs in Placer County. And that's a very important piece in terms of talking about Crisis Now's approach and SAMHSA's best practice approaches. If you're going to have a mental health triage program, it's obviously very helpful to have a diversion option or options as well. So. I don't know if that helps.
This is Hector. Can I add something to the conversation? Can you hear me?
Sure. Go ahead, Hector. Yeah. I heard
you. So I appreciate the documents. It is very broad. My peers have mentioned. But I just want to kind of focus on, because there's so many different things that I wish we could have the time to do. It is the cultural element. There was a section in there regarding a November presentation at the commission. And I think, while it was really, really fantastic, one of the things that I walked away from that meeting is that it was very kind of pre-COVID. From a culture perspective, we're seeing, at least from what I share, that one of the biggest barriers for communities of color, racially diverse, is an issue of access to mental health services right now. Whether it be in person, on the telephone, or remotely, to begin to actually start talking about cultural awareness. The digital divide seems to be of such a significant issue for my communities, particularly in remote areas and even in urban areas where internet signal is not very reliable or phone service is not very reliable. For many of us, having to make the choice between going to a clinic that still has law enforcement with guns at the entrance is a very difficult one. So accessing services remotely is of the paramount importance. So having those particular capacities, whether it be the knowledge about how to utilize the services remotely, also having access to the technology and the services like computer or internet, are a significant disparity on top of all the other things that we were already kind of facing. And so when I look at that particular element in there, I really would have hoped that aside from what is presenting, that it would really have taken into consideration the access and equity issue that our communities are facing right now as we face multiple pandemics, especially, for example, in the Latino community, who like other communities, is having such a disproportionate impact. We have folks that are using their phones so that their children can take their classes. And by the time it's time for them to go to their Zoom doctor appointments, we don't even have enough minutes for some of our folks to do it. So those are some of the issues that we're facing. Some families have like one phone for the whole household, to do classes and doctors and everything. And so, those are some of the significant disparity issues in addition to other things that we're facing. So I really wanted to kind of highlight that kind of difference from what you're proposing in the report and to some of the current realities that my communities are experiencing.
Jean Harris here, if I could go next. Thank you. I'd like to also address the late arrival of the document. I really wish I would have had much more time to read through and digest it to make better comments. And I also would suggest that the Cultural and Linguistic Competence Committee also be given an opportunity to review this and have their input and their dialogue as well, because I think it's very important to address that perspective. The Solano County engagements may work for other counties that are smaller, but I'm in Los Angeles County. And so although those are some great ideas, they aren't always the best way to get community engagement in such a large county as LA and some other large counties. The few issues that I've seen that I haven't seen addressed in the document on the ground here during the isolation is, first of all, criminal justice diversion to facilities that are closed. And so individuals with severe mental illness are being held in jail and there isn't anywhere for them to go, even though the mental health courts and the judges have release them to treatment facilities. So many of them are not accepting patients because of the pandemic. And also children that are currently in an IMD are not having visitors, so they aren't seeing their families. And they need to be provided with some kind of a private visit via Zoom or whatever we could provide for those children that need to have contact with family members. Obviously, peer providers is of the utmost priority here, because our peers know what it's like to deal with the system firsthand. We know what it feels like to be on the other end as a patient, and we need to have those peers providing that mentorship, the advocacy, and the support for individuals more than ever during this time. Children need access to in-person services somehow. The lack of in-person during this pandemic has been the underlying cause for several children taking their lives in my community in just the recent weeks. And they were doing better in treatment prior to the pandemic, but when it went into a technology type of distanced meeting, they were not engaged. They were playing games on their computer, according to their parents, and not really engaging in any group meetings or one-on-one clinical treatment programs. And so somehow we've got to figure out how we can get over that. Even if it's at a 10-foot distance with masks on, you need to have physical contact. And staff stress. I have seen staff so stressed out, and I'm sure you can all relate to that, that this is stressful for everyone. And when you're a parent at home trying to take care of your children's needs of education, and you're trying to work, and you're dealing with all the economic and stress of the unknown, how do we approach dealing with the lack of staff that is out on long-term illness, that is redeployed and no longer in their assigned provider capacities? There's COVID has created a humongous lack of access to staff because of this as well. And I don't know how you fix that, because, okay, they're sick, they're ill, and there's a lot of people that are experiencing long-term symptoms of the COVID illness and stress-related illness. So we've got to be able to replace those staff members somehow, but everybody's also in a hiring freeze because of the economic issues. And so, you know, these are difficult questions that I think we need this group wisdom of this committee to come up with some possible answers. rural access to technology has been brought up before. It's humongous where my community is in the high desert of Antelope Valley, north of LA. There's people that do not have access to the internet and they have been lost. And there has also been people talking to me about they haven't seen their doctor or their mental health provider in months. They are not able to get their prescriptions refilled from their doctor. And that's a lot based on technology. I have thrown out there that maybe we could provide an iPad that was held by the provider and disinfected, dropped at the door, and then the provider could be outside of the home next to their vehicle, and the client can have the laptop or iPad or something so that they can communicate through the iPad, but still have a much more personal contact than being at the other end of who knows where. And that's all I've got. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jean. Commissioner Campbell's having, go ahead. Anybody else or any committee members?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm not on the committee. I'm public comment. Do you want to tell me
when
it's time for that?
Yeah, we'll have that up next. Let's see. I do see you on there, Lola. Any other comments from commission or from committee members?
Hi, I'm David Oster.
Hi, David. Go ahead.
I'm on the Cultural Competence Commission. I'm new here.
Yeah, let's see if there's any other CFLC committee members who would like to make a comment. Yes, Commissioner Wooten, I see your hand gone.
Thank you. I assume there wasn't any other committee members, and if there is, I apologize, but I wanted to piggyback a little bit on what Jean was saying. I've worked with our staff there on the suicide prevention project, Striving for Zero, and I haven't been able to read thoroughly through the report for COVID-19, but I was wondering if you could tell me if there's a reference to Striving for Zero. And I also understand that we have $2 million to implement that with the counties, but I still feel there should be some kind of connection with COVID. Because like Jean was talking about, everybody's stressed out and are not able to communicate with folks in person, et cetera. So.
Yeah, Jim, would you like to speak to that? I know that is part of this framework. It was mentioned in the document, but.
Yeah, happy to do that. And Commissioner Wooten, thank you for the question. So we've been coordinating what are our options, what could we be doing very closely with the work that that Ashley Mills is leading in terms of suicide prevention implementation. And so a lot of, so some of the work that is being done under that rubric, if you will, is obviously being emphasized because of COVID, as well as the long-term structure and infrastructure we're trying to develop. But then there are clearly opportunities here around certain populations to emphasize and to connect with some of that work that we're doing under Striving for Zero. And a good example of that is the work with youth. So, this is a very general framework. These are just saying these are ideas, and the feedback we're getting so far is extraordinarily valuable at knowing how we could sharpen and focus this. And if there was strong interest in kind of doubling down, if you will, on the suicide prevention work as it would relate in one particular area or another, that would be a really reasonable conclusion to reach.
Well, thank you, and thank you for listening to my input.
This is Hector. Jim just mentioned something really interesting. I think for those people that are able to kind of reach out to folks either by Zoom or remotely, one of the things that I'm really finding in my community is being able to talk to a peer, especially around the issues of high anxiety and suicidality. So, I mean, now that we're doing things remotely, this is a great opportunity for other counties to kind of taste the services that other counties have and the best providers. So that's something that I would have liked to have had. Being able to have like a state level peer support network oh my gosh, that would be fantastic right now, garnering all the different counties and just being able, this is like the peer services that we have remotely. That would be a significant, I think, really perhaps great approach in the right direction, culturally wise, needs wise, modality wise. So.
I'd like to say something.
Yes, Sharon.
Okay. Oh, hi. Okay. Yes, as far as the academics of our students, studies are coming out and they're finding that with the grades that are coming out with the first term, students are failing and they're not able to keep up with the academics. And so that is causing additional stress for the high performing students because they're not able to get what they need or what they used to get in the face-to-face classroom. Also, we're having very bad weather here in Southern California, and the power company is having rolling blackouts. So our children don't have electricity at home because Edison is turning off the power. So the kids have nowhere to go. And that's just creating extra stress that is not in our report because the stress is daily and it's creating a lot of problems. I'm finding in my community that people do not want to respond to Governor Newsom's stay at home order. And they just refuse to comply. So how do we get our people to abide by the laws of the state, even if we don't want to comply with them? And I think that is the biggest challenge, you know, these rolling blackouts, children are failing in school, we don't know what to do about it, and we as adults are scrambling, so how can we give that back, give out what is needed to our constituents? I also concur with my committee members in that we only got this report 2 days ago, so it's very hard to respond. I'd also like to hear what the CFLC members have to say about that, the paper, and provide, I mean, it's, you know, just off the top of my head, I think that maybe from the state level, if they can, we can tell the school districts to relax a little bit on the grading standards and give our students a little more time to complete their studies, to take their exams, to do the work that they need to do because they're not maintaining their 2.0 grade average. Thank you.
Hello, this is Ruth. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, good. I'm sorry. I've been pressing star nine, star nine, star nine. So hoping somebody will hear me so I can comment. I am a member of the CFLCC. I do have a lot to say, but I'm going to keep it short. As Commissioner Wooten and Kat know me, I do tend to speak a lot. And a lot of it, I really am very happy to hear everybody speaking about the children and the parents' plight right now. As you may or may not know, I am a mother of three resilient children, and I cannot fathom being at home. My children are older, but I have coworkers and friends, my sisters, my comadres, everybody around me, they're just so stressed. And these are just parents and people that have children who were in regular schooling and no mental health issues. And working with the navigation team and working with Full Service Partnership and calling the families and the children, these parents are just really at their wits' end, at the end of the rope, because they are dealing with children who are going to school. And then there's a big old problem with the individual educational plans right now. None of the districts, none of the schools want to do any studies. They don't want to update the IEPs, amend whatever it is that's working or not working. So, you know, these children that are getting the services are really falling to the wayside. I agree with some of the others who have mentioned the fact that you know, about grading and so forth, but at the same time too, the system is very, very strained. I have a lot of teachers who are just also finding it very difficult. But I also wanted to speak about the $2 million we're talking about. I think it's awesome that this money is being allocated and being done, but this is a drop in the bucket of what it really is to come. It's going to be a shortfall. Hopefully with this COVID-19 and it being different and we're in a crisis, maybe some innovative plans and different way of looking outside the box to service everyone, because those who didn't have mental health issues before, and you know, you keep hearing we're all this together, we're stressed. Everybody in one way, shape or form has been affected by this. And we all tend to have more mental health issues coming out of this. I also wanted to see to make sure that when we're allocating the money and looking at the $2 million, that I don't want to say that being petty, but I want to, you know, we understand costs, we understand administration, we understand how that all works, but at the same time, all that money is being used and it's sucked up and it's less for the work itself and the money really getting out to the families, the children, and the participants that is needed. And when we're looking at the schools, I see school mental health, I see a lot of these paperwork, and like everybody else, I really didn't get to go through all the papers and read everything and highlight, so I kind of glanced and briefed over it. But I am very happy to the fact that we're looking at the 0 to 5, because we're talking about first 5, the school mental health, but we also not forget about the colleges. So if we're looking at a lot of these things and support, I really think that we really, really need to look at it and talk about it to make sure that everybody from 0 to 100 is being looked at and being supported. Well, that's it for now, I guess, but it's just a lot to take in, and it's a lot of that we need to do and a lot of work ahead. And to remind everybody, we're also, you know, this is my pep talk type of thing, that, you know, we are still, you know, things look bleak, but we're here to inspire hope and highlight the resilience, you know, that we're still going through this, but we can still reach that end and see what we could do to make a difference, because we're not perfect and this is all new. You know, we're building the plane as we're flying it, but I'm sure with all these great people and input, we can really come up with something that we can all work together. Thank you.
Great. Commissioner Tamplin, I just wanted to let you know, it looks like we have 10 public comments. And if we do the 3 minutes each, that'll take us to 2:30, which is where our agenda item number 2 is at 2:30. So not sure if we want to go to public comment at this time or if you wanted to take some other comments from the committee.
I think it will be a good time to transition to public comment. I do see a lot of hands. So unless there are any committee members that haven't spoken, please unmute yourself and say something. Other than that, I'm going to rely on Kayla to help me with who's first in line for public comment.
Yes. So the first public commenter, yes, is, you're correct, Matt Wine, 9837. Please feel free. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, this is Mark Carmatz, and I have some.
Oh, sorry.
And yes, I'm glad to be on the phone. And that is that Project Return is doing the peer paraprofessional trainings, and they've also have several virtual support groups. And I can name a few of them. I can't name all of them, but there are several virtual support groups that they are doing. So I would like to give them a plug. In fact, I'm being asked by my supervisors to give them a plug. And there are other organizations that are doing such as Doors to Wellbeing. Tomorrow there's going to be a call from CAMPRO regarding peer support, and Guy and Colin Twan is going to be on the next, is going to be on one of those calls, and that's going to be I believe next week, next Thursday. So please get in contact and start networking. And as you well know, 803 passed. We need to get that implemented. We need to find out who and what different states and what different counties are doing regarding certified peer specialists.